Welcome to Riff Talk on RiffManiaRadio.com. A place for new music, upcoming artists, and specialized interviews.
Okay, folks. Today I'm talking with my good friend and co-host, Jeff DeBerry. So, Jeff, how was your New Year?
I had a really good New Year. It was very quiet. My wife and I, we just spent the evening together. We had some dinner and just relaxed. That was about it. It was very enjoyable.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear that. Anyway, since we last talked, Jeff, quite a bit has gone in. Of course, tragically, there was awful school shooting in Connecticut, which I wanted to talk about in regards to Motley Crue singer Vince Neil going online a couple days later and posting basically that he felt there was need for stronger gun control laws. And he was coming kind of from the standpoint of somebody kind of relayed from losing a child at a young age. So he got all this negative feedback, basically people upset about their right to bear arms and not wanting gun control. And I want to talk a little bit about that because I'm kind of surprised that in light of all these schoolyard shootings and things that people would have such negative things to say just over somebody wanting stronger gun control laws. Where do you stand on the issue?
Gun control?
Yeah.
I have nothing against anyone owning a gun. I just think that if someone's going to own a gun, that they should keep it in a place where someone such as this person that did the shooting can't get their hands on it. I myself, I've never owned a gun. I've never even held one, let alone shot a gun. I have no desire to have a gun. I'm not afraid of somebody coming in my house or things like that. You know, I mean, I hear all this stuff on the news, read it, you know, and online about people rushing to buy guns because they're afraid the government's going to pass some law that's going to restrict them from owning a gun. I mean, the truth of it is, I mean, if the government's going to do whatever it is they want to do, you know, if they were to pass some kind of a law, which I know they never will, but just for the sake of argument, hypothetically speaking, if they were to pass a law that banned people from owning a firearm, what are they going to do about it? You know, nothing. If they were to get caught with it, they'd probably go to jail and have whatever things that the other government have confiscated from them. You know, I'm from Chicago, you know, and Chicago over the past couple of years is like now the murder capital of the world. You know, I mean, people get shot every day. I mean, I lived in Chicago for over 40 years, and I never was ever in my whole life ever confronted with a situation where I thought that I would need a gun. You know, where things happen, you know. I just think that, you know, people, like Vince McNeil, I mean, I agree with what he said here. You know, I mean, he says, why is everyone so concerned with guns? What about the children that were murdered today? Get your priorities straight. Come on, people. And even when he goes on to, you know, say, F you to everyone who puts a gun in front of kids, do not come to any shows, you were sick. I'm sorry, but I don't think he was wrong in saying that. You know, I don't. I mean, he lost a child. You know, his child, you know, granted was not killed the way these 20 children were killed, but he lost a child. So he knows how it feels to lose a child. You know, and it just seems to me that the NRA and all these people they talk a big piece about, you know, wanting, you know, about, you know, and they try to make it look like they're sympathetic. I mean, maybe they are. I don't know. But I'm sorry. I just don't see the need for it. You know, I think it's wrong for people to put, you know, firearms before the lives of anybody, not just children. I mean, anybody.
Yeah, you know, I quite agree. And, you know, my whole thing on the thing is, even if you look at the recent shooting in Connecticut, I mean, supposedly, you know, supposedly the guy's mother that he lived with, supposedly he was disabled and she owned guns and she actually trained him to use a gun. And my first thought was, you know, if your son's disabled to begin with and, you know, why would you train somebody like that to use a gun? And again, in this case, it's a perfect example of, you know, maybe if that mother not owned any guns, that shooting would, he would not have been able to have that shooting take place, or he might have had a lot harder time getting a gun. And it just goes to show you that people, you know, I agree people have rights to bear arms, you know, if they do it in the right way. But again, you know, I've lived 41 years without ever having my hands on a gun like you. I don't feel the need. I mean, you know, I'm the kind of person, if something's going to take place, it's going to take place. And if I was to have a gun on me, there might be a greater chance of, you know, something of me getting shot or somebody else. But, you know, in a lot of these cases, if the guns weren't even around, these tragedies such as this wouldn't have even, you know, taken place. And, you know, and I gotta say, in regards to Vince Neil's post, I was asking another friend of mine what they thought about it. And they told me, well, you know, I'm surprised that a guy that killed somebody drunk driving would have this kind of response. And I think that goes to show sometimes, you know, people get attacked for what they say, good or bad, sometimes just because of, you know, who the messenger is. And I think, like you said, I can see Vince Neil's, I don't pretend to know what it's like to lose a child, because I've never been in that experience, but he does, even though his daughter died 4 years old of cancer. I mean, he could probably relate a lot better than I could to what all those people were going through that day when they lost their, you know, children.
Exactly. I mean, I grew up in a house, when I was growing up, my father, he was a police officer. So there were guns in our house, but he kept them put away. I mean, they were not in sight. They were in a place where nobody could had access to them. This person that did the shooting, I mean, like you said, you know, his mother taught him how to shoot a gun. I mean, you know, somebody that's mentally unstable on any level, I mean, it's to teach him how to use a gun, I mean, to me, I mean, that's not a good idea. You know, I don't know what would possess someone to do that. I don't know. I'm not her, so I can't speak for her, you know. But I don't know what the reasoning behind that would be. You know, I just grow tired of hearing about, you know, people going into shopping malls and movie theaters and colleges and high schools and with guns and just shooting up the place and shooting people for no apparent reason, shooting innocent people that have you know, that for what, you know, what are they trying to gain out of it? Maybe there are maybe 15 minutes of fame, or I don't know. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to be known. I mean, I wouldn't want you know, have a legacy, you know, as known to be someone that shot and killed a bunch of children or people or anything like that. You know, I mean, and then you know, the one thing that I look at it, the way I look at it, is the one, you know, only positive thing about it is that they usually do take their own life. So I mean, that, I mean, to me, is okay. Well, that's saving the taxpayers money from having to house them in a prison until you know, until the authorities decide what they're going to do with them. You know, I don't understand this. I don't think we've seen the end of it. I think we'll see more of it. And really, the media, you know, the way the media just continues to talk about it. You know, the next thing, you know, I've read stuff about, you know, all the kids posting stuff on their Facebook pages, though, that they've done a better job, and it brings all these people out of the woodwork, you know, and it's the media, just the circus that the media is, makes it even that much worse, you know. It's I mean, to me, it's all just a bunch of, you know, I don't like it. I try not to even, I mean, when I hear stuff like that on TV, you know, I'll sit and I'll watch it, and I'll just shake my head, you know, but I don't give myself, I try not to get involved in it that much, but I mean, I have my own opinions, like I said, but I mean, the reason that, you know, the Second Amendment was made was because, you know, the continental United States of America was ruled by various kingdoms in one empire. You know, for example, Florida, Texas, and California were under Spanish rule. Territories from Louisiana all the way up to Wisconsin and beyond were ruled by France, not to mention that the major portion of Canada was under British rule. You know, in addition, the islands of the Caribbean and the Indies and what they used to call the Bermudas were where the bulk of the British naval power remained, had their cannons aimed at us, you know. Now, therefore, the threat of foreign invasion was still very real, you know. I mean, does anyone remember the War of 1812? You know, like I said, I mean, I even wrote this on my page. You know, what I'm trying to say is the Second Amendment was instituted so that the citizenry of the 13 colonies would stand a fighting chance of defending themselves. You know, and I don't think that any of these children were posed any threat as far as you know a foreign invasion. You know, this mother was not thinking about stuff like that, and people don't think about this kind of stuff. They're just afraid someone's going to come break in their house and do this and do that to them. I mean, what's to say that even if they do have a gun, what's to say that someone does come in your house, you know, for, you know, hypothetically, someone breaks in your house, you know, and they have a gun. I mean, what, do these people sit with a gun in their hand all day long? I mean, they keep it someplace, and what's to say that they're going to have enough time to go and retrieve that weapon before this person, whoever it is that's threatening them, is going to have a chance to do something, you know? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense.
You know, and I agree, and that's part of why I enjoy talking to somebody like you, but, you know, you're able to back up what you say, you know, like you're saying, you know, there's a reason we have these laws, but people take them to the extreme, and also on the flip side of that, I think, like you said, there's all these copycat people that come out in the wake of tragedies like this, and one recent case, I don't even remember the guy's name, and I really don't care to give him his 15 minutes of fame, but there was an incident shortly after the Connecticut shooting in L.A. where this guy went online, like you said, on Facebook, and he was posting that he was going to go and shoot up all these schools around the L.A. area, and the police actually, they went to the point of finding out where he lived. They actually arrested him, but then they decided to drop the charges for the simple fact, they don't like the fact that he went online and said what he was planning to do, but then they said they had to drop the charges because he wasn't specific about which schools he was going to shoot up. Had he gone online and specifically named schools, then the charges would have sticked. So it's almost kind of crazy that you go to the trouble of arresting somebody, but then you drop the charges because they're not specific about where they're planning to shoot, and you almost got to wait till they go and carry out their threat till you do something about it. So, you know, I think laws like that need to be changed, you know, even people just making threats.
I think that, you know, if they're going to change something, I mean, I'm not, you know, I mean, I don't think that they should, you know, ban firearms, you know, because some people like to collect them. They like to hunt. You know, they like to do, you know, certain things and stuff like that, things of that nature. You know, so, I mean, I think that there should be some kind of, I mean, even if they, but, you know, the bottom line is, even no matter what kind of law they pass, it's not going to stop people from accessing guns. It's just like drugs, you know. They've been fighting the war on drugs since the 80s, and people are still doing them. They're still dying from them. They're still buying them. They're still selling them. I mean, the same thing would be the same with guns, you know. I mean, you have countries like England and France where owning a firearm is illegal. You know, people are not allowed to own firearms. They don't have the kind of crime that we have here in the United States. They don't have murder rates like they have in Chicago and New York City and Los Angeles and stuff like that. They don't have that kind of stuff out there. You know, but this has been, you know, this, you know, this law has been in effect, you know, since before any of us were born. You know, I mean, hundreds of years ago. You know, so I mean, it's not possible to go and gather up every firearm that's on the street and do away with them. That's never going to happen. But there should be some type of law that, you know, that restricts people from purchasing firearms or even ammunition. I mean, I remember seeing a little. I watched. I mean, I'm a big fan of Michael Moore. You know, and I watched his movie, his documentary, Bowling for Columbine. And he had a clip of Chris Rock on there, you know, doing his stand-up. And Chris Rock said that if he was in charge, he'd make bullets cost $5,000. You know, something along that lines where people just, I mean, someone with the ammunition, you can't purchase ammunition. You want to buy the gun, okay, but you can't buy bullets for it. You know, I mean, and I don't see the need for anyone to own an automatic machine gun. You know, except for you know, people in the military. And stuff like that. There's no reason in the world that anyone needs to own a semi-automatic firearm or an automatic submachine gun. I mean, that just don't make any sense.
Yeah, you know, I agree. And like you said, I think it should be like, you know, getting a driver's license. I mean, it's kind of ironic when you think about that. People often are much easier for them to go out and get a license to own a gun than it is to get an actual driver's license. And I agree that people should be able to own guns and everything, but like you're saying, things have to be done within with the reason, you know, like you said, your father was a policeman, you know, so he legitimately, he's a police officer, he needs a gun for his job. You know, there's somebody that has a, should really, you know, possess a gun. However, if somebody's going to get a gun and they research and they find out this guy is just getting out of a mental institution, that he's been convicted of armed robbery and attempted murder, that's somebody in my mind that, okay, maybe that person doesn't need a gun. You know, they've got a criminal background, they've actually got a history of getting violent with people. I think it's just, if they would do that, they would go to that measure, maybe as far as gun control, maybe there'd be a little less crime. Like you said, you're always going to have crime, you're always going to have murder. It's just, I think, you know, if it might take somebody maybe 10 days to get a gun license, get it approved or whatever, opposed to maybe 1 or 2 days, whatever, you know, a lot of stuff could be prevented.
Psychiatric wards for any reason at all. I mean, if a person has ever checked himself into a psychiatric ward for any reason whatsoever, I mean, they will never legally be able to own a gun at all at any time in their life. You know, that's really a lot. But I mean, that's been a lot for many years. But you know, as far as like people buying them on the streets, stuff, it's just, like I said, it's just like drugs. I don't see it ever going away. You know, I mean, some people are claiming that if they're, you know, stricter gun laws is going to mean higher crime rates. I mean, maybe they're right. I don't know. You know, I think something has to be done. I mean, personally, I don't know what they could do, you know, to make it to rectify the situation. I mean, just for me, my heart just goes out to, you know, the parents and families of those children, you know, that were killed. I mean, I sat here and cried. I mean, I never seen anything so horrific in my entire life. I mean, to me, it was worse than the 3,000 people that died on September 11th. You know, I mean, these were little children. You know, I mean, little kids that didn't even have a chance. You know, I mean, they, you know, died at the hands of what I would consider to be a monster, a psychopath. You know, just he was psychotic, you know, and I mean, what he did was a psychotic act, you know, for whatever reasons he had. I mean, there could not have been any kind of logical reason for what he did, you know, and, you know, I mean, I read stuff about, you know, his mother was trying to have him, you know, committed because she couldn't handle him anymore, and that's why he did this, but no one's ever going to know the real reason, because he's dead, she's dead. And, you know, it's just going to be nothing but a bunch of speculation, you know, and it's, you know, it's going to get to a point where it's just like beating a dead horse, you know, you're not going to gain anything from it, you know, so I mean, but I do believe that there should be something should be done. What that is, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if anyone has enough, can come up with something that would be able to stop any of it. Sometimes I look at things and the way things are, and I just say it is what it is, you know. And there's nothing I can personally do about it. All I can do is take care of myself, you know, and then do whatever I have to do, you know, to see it that you know that in life, you know, I make mistakes, whatever, to rectify whatever it is I've done. You know, I don't, you know, as far as other people go and what they do and what their reasons are for what things that they do, I don't know. And then really gets to the point where I don't even care, you know, because it's all a bunch, I mean, it's just a bunch of just the same thing over and over and over and over. You know, I mean, Michael Moore points out in his movie, Boy for Columbine, how, you know, the media only focuses on the bad stuff. You know, how they target, you know, other ethnic backgrounds and stuff like that, and it's true. It's the way our society is, at least in this country, you know. But that's the way things are, you know. And I don't see them ever changing. you know, at least not in my lifetime. You know, someday may come along with a profound idea that will just rectify all of it, but I don't think any of us will ever live to see that happen.
And the last thing I'm going to say on this matter before we move on, especially in regards to the Vince Neil Twitter post, is, again, he's a guy that, besides being the frontman of Motley Crue, when people think of him, they often think, oh, yeah, he's a guy that killed somebody when he was drunk driving, and he's continuing to drink. But, you know, he's also done a lot of good in his life. Like, a friend of mine and me go back and forth because, you know, once again, Vince had a daughter, died 4 years old of stomach cancer. And since then, he's formed a charity, the Skylar Neil Memorial, where he raises money doing golf tournaments and various things, donating money to Children's Hospital. But, you know, oftentimes that stuff like that that people do get overlooked. And people, like you said, the media, they only like to point out, negative things that people, do or say, especially, famous rock stars or actors and actresses. And I think that's a shame. And the only other thing I'm going to say in regards to his post, and I think it's a shame that he felt the need to go online and apologize for what he said when, I'm the kind of guy that, if I say something, I kind of stand behind it. And I think just because he got negative feedback, there was no need to really go online and apologize now.
Okay, let's take a short break and let's listen to a song from the band Thy Will Be Done and Temples, their EP. And the song is You the Apathy Divine. They can really jam. And we're back with more from J-Rock Houston and Jeff DeBury.
Moving on to something a little lighter, Jeff. I noticed today on your Facebook you posted an article about some other stupid teenager that went online and was posting made some stupid remark about he was bragging how he was drunk driving, and again the police came and got arrested. I mean, what do you think about somebody so stupid would, you know, do something like that?
He posted, he says, driving drunk, and it was classic, like a, you know, like a smiley face. But to whoever's vehicle I hit, I am sorry. This is an 18-year-old kid, you know. First of all, he shouldn't be drinking. Second of all, I mean, drinking and driving is anyone who drinks and drives. Well, I mean, I have my own, in the past years, dealings with doing that kind of stuff. You know, fortunately, I never hurt anybody except myself. And for me, you know, Facebook is not the place to be going and putting stuff like that on there. I mean, but then again, on the other hand, you know, I mean, I believe in karma 100%, and what goes around comes around. Nobody gets away with anything, one way or another. You will pay for whatever crimes you have committed, whether it be by law or by some other way. This kid, I mean, they came and arrested him, and they charged him with 2 counts of failing to perform the duties of a driver. They couldn't arrest him for drunk driving, of course, because it was the next day, and in order to be arrested for driving under the influence of anything, they have to catch you right then and there, you know. But they did arrest him, you know, and take him to jail for, you know, basically hit and run, you know, leaving the scene of an accident. All it's probably going to happen to this kid is he'll end up getting fined, maybe some community service, probation, or something like that. He's not going to go to prison. But, you know, I think that, you know, maybe something, you know, maybe he'll learn from this. But unfortunately, I mean, I was 18 years old one time, you know, and when I was 18 years old, I thought I knew everything. You know, I mean, and you know, and as the older you get, you know, you come to realize that you knew really nothing at all. And I mean, I'm 49 years old, and I'm still learning, you know. But yeah, this is just really. I seen this, and I just had a laugh about it because, I mean, it shows this kid's picture, and it's just like, yeah, okay. people seem to think that a social network like Facebook, that's not the place you want to go, you know, to post real personal stuff. I mean, I try not to post real personal stuff on Facebook, you know. I like making friends. I like, you know, sharing my music with people, things of that nature. But as far as going on there and saying this is just flat out stupidity, you know. This kid was asking to get arrested. But I mean, it's a good thing that he did. You know, maybe he'll learn a lesson, and maybe it may, you know, stop him from doing it again. You know, I don't know. I just thought it was something kind of humorous in a way, and I guess maybe in a sick kind of a way. I don't know. Just sad that you come on there and, you know, then say that, you know, hit somebody's car. Because I mean, you have people on, you know, you have people on your page, you know, some that may know you personally, you know, or know where you live and stuff like that, and all they gotta do is call the police, and so and so is, you know, he's posting something about drinking and driving, and he hit some car and took off. You might want to go check this out and make sure nobody got hurt or something like that, you know. And people, you know, there are good Samaritans out there like that that will do stuff like that, and that's obviously what happened in this case.
Yeah, you know, and the amazing thing about it is, you know, this is almost a laughable situation because, like, when I read it, I thought, you know, what an idiot. Why would somebody go online and post that they did that? But the sad thing about it is you're hearing about more and more of these stories where people are just going online and posting all the stupid things they do. I mean, even down to, like, just going to the local Christmas party, whatever, getting drunk, and then they go to a job interview the next day, and people, you know, people go online, they research their Facebook page, and because they were stripping at a party or whatever, they don't get the job, and they wonder why.
Exactly. You know, Facebook is, to me, is just, some people really, I have like almost 3,000 people on my page, you know, and there's only like a handful of them that I actually know personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, I see, I can scroll down the homepage, and which I do almost every morning. You know, I'm just looking at it. I just shake my head at some of the stuff. You know, I don't comment on everything because I'd probably lose a lot of friends if I did. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, be fans or whatever if I did. You know, I just people are, you know, they are who they are. You know, just like I am who I am. You know, nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect.
Exactly.
Know? Everybody has their own opinion, and, you know, it's like, you know, opinions, you know, everyone has their own opinion. You know, some are good, some are bad, some don't make any sense. You know, but that's what they are, is opinion. And you know, some people live by certain values, certain things. You know, I mean, I like going to say, I have two Facebook pages. You know, one is a personal page with my real last name on it, and the other one is my Jeff DeBerry page. My Jeff DeBerry page is the one that I'm on most of the time. Because I like to share my music. That is my main reason for being on there. It's not really, you know, maybe make some cool friends. I've met a lot of other musicians on there that I talk to that do the same type of thing I do. You know, it's just some to me that's just fun. I don't, you know, try to take it seriously, you know, but when someone goes on there and they start, you know, posting like real personal stuff, especially if they have like a lot of people that they really don't know on their page, I don't know, that I don't think it's a good idea.
Let's take another short break and listen to a band called Lacrimosa and their song Revolution. Now more with your host, J. Rock Houston and Jeff DeBury.
And now let me ask you, Jeff, talking a little bit about Facebook for a minute. You earlier last year, didn't you experience where somebody, you had like a stalker, some guy going online trying to pose as you? He was posting messages on your personal page, and people were worried that you'd went back to using drugs and alcohol. How did you deal with that?
I've had my account hacked before, you know. I just changed the password, you know, so they can't get on my page anymore. I mean, some of that's gonna happen, you know. I have a lot of people on that page, and I mean, and most of them I don't even know personally, you know. So, I mean, yeah, that did happen.
Now, when that happened though, were you at all surprised? Pardon? When that happened, were you at all surprised though? Of a kind of outpouring of love that people had, you know, that they were generally concerned that, you know, has he gone back to using drugs? You know, we're worried. Is there anything we can do for you, Jeff? It seemed like, you know, there were a lot of people that sadly believed that stuff, and but they were kind of in your corner at the same time.
Well, yeah, I mean, I appreciate that, you know. But no, I'm sober.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no desire to do that stuff anymore. You know, it's been a long time. that's why when I see a lot of people posting, I don't find it humorous when I see people that are constantly posting things about, you know, using drugs and out drinking alcohol all the time and stuff like that. It just reminds me of myself, you know, a lot and stuff I used to do, you know, and I know that what I've been through in my life, that type of stuff, you know, took me to really the depths of hell. And it nearly took my life on more than one occasion. So, but I mean, I don't ever try to tell anyone what to do. I will never try to tell anyone what to do. I will never ever go to someone and say, look, you need to stop. You know, you might be an alcoholic or you might be a drug addict. You know, in order for someone to recover or from that disease, from this disease that I have, you have to really want to do it. You know, you can't. You know, I mean, I've known people that have been forced into the program by the courts and have come out on top and are sober and stuff today. But, you know, for me, it took a long, long time. I had to go through a lot of pain, a lot of loss, a lot of a lot of really bad things in order for me to come to a point in my life to make a conscious decision that, well, do I want to live or do I want to die? Because that's the road I was going down, you know. So when I see people, you know, posting things like that, I mean, I don't ever even comment on it. I'm just like, okay, you know, whatever. I mean, I just keep scrolling right down the page, you know, saying that's your deal, that's what you like to do. God bless you. You know, I choose not to do that kind of stuff. And people, somebody wants to go on my page and try and make me look bad. You know, I mean, you know, the fact that I have so many people on my page, I can't really find out who it is that's doing it, you know. But if I did, if I were to, all I would do is just delete them, you know, block them so they can't contact me anymore, you know, stuff like that. And people do things, like I said, you know, people do things for reasons that I have no idea, you know, or why they would want to do something like that. I mean, I've never hurt anybody. I've never said any kind of negative things to anybody on there. You know, I mean, I've never had anybody, you know, talk negatively about my music or anything like that. So, I mean, I don't know why someone would do that, but yeah, they did. But that was a while back, you know. I haven't had any type of situation like that ever since. You know, I don't know what happened to that person. I have no idea.
Well, that's just unfortunate you had to go through that, but appreciate you sharing that with us, Jeff. Now,
take another break to pay tribute to a long-lasting rocker, Ronnie James Dio, who passed just about a year ago. Anyway, we're going to play a song that is a, you know, real tribute to him, and this one is called This Is Your Life from the very best of Volume 2 from Dio, recently released. Kick back and enjoy.
Who cares
Wow, what an appropriate song. That song is not one of his heaviest, but it's actually one of those ones that surely shows his talent to be able to sing. And it's a good segue into our next portion of the Rock Talk show that we have for you today. This is your host, or co-host, I should say, Lethal X.
Okay, folks, this is Jason J. Rock Houston, and I'm talking with my co-host and good friend, Jeff DeBury. Now, Jeff, this is called Rock Talk, so of course, I'd like to get in now to talking a little bit about some music, and in particular, Ronnie James, the late great legendary singer Ronnie James Dio, who recently released a new CD. It's kind of a best of album. It's some of the lesser known songs from his solo career. It's called The Very Beast of Dio 2. And I'd like to start this off asking you, you're no doubt a Dio fan, but could you kind of tell our listeners a story of how you first became a Dio fan?
Well, I've always liked Ronnie James Dio. I mean, he's one of the greatest, you know, voices in the history in heavy metal and rock music. You know, I mean, it's just like any other band. I just heard him one day and I liked it. You know, I was never really a big Black Sabbath fan with him or Ozzy. I liked Rainbow. I think Rainbow was probably the first band that I ever heard him sing with. You know, like Sounds Like Man on the Silver Mountain, you know, and stuff like that. I did get a chance to see Ronnie James Dio back in, I think it was 1984. It was his last Mind tour, and I mean, he was just awesome. I mean, he put on a tremendous show. I mean, his Vivian Campbell, Vinny Appice on the drums. I mean, it was a tremendous show. I have a lot of respect for Ronnie James Dio, and I was very saddened when he passed away. But he was very sick, you know. And sometimes, you know, when someone is very sick like that, you'd rather see them, you know, not have to suffer anymore, you know. But I mean, he's a legend. I mean, his legend will live in infamy in the rock and metal world. You know, I'm a tremendous fan of Ronnie James Dio.
Okay, let's take another short break and listen to another song from Ronnie James Dio's The Very Best of Volume 2. And we're going to listen to a song that was actually a bonus track on that one called Electra. Kick back, and I hope you enjoy this.
And then the dark.
and we're back with more about Ronnie James Dio.
Yeah, you know, to me, you know, I first became aware of Ronnie James Dio. Actually, it was a Black Sabbath album, 1980s, Heaven and Hell. And as much of a fan as I am of Ozzy era of Sabbath, I gotta say that I'm a much bigger fan of a Dio era of Sabbath, because what most people fail to realize is in the original lineup of Black Sabbath, it was actually Geezer Butler who wrote most of his songs, not Ozzy. And you gotta think back when Ronnie James Dio first joined the band, a lot of people were expecting Sabbath to go away, but they weren't going to be as big as they were. But they actually went on to become bigger and, you know, more successful simply because of Ronnie's songwriting, you know. And he was a very visual guy as far as his lyrics and stuff. And, like, the first song I ever heard off that album was, of course, the single Neon Nights. And that's one of my favorite Ronnie tracks. And, you know, everybody I've ever talked to, from, you know, Jeff Pilson to Rudy Sarza, who've actually worked for Ronnie, they have nothing but nice things to say about the guy. And I actually got recently, last year, I think it was in October of last year, to go see a Dio Disciples show, which is actually the surviving members of Dio and Tim Ripper Owens and Oney Logan, who used to be in Lynch Mob, performing performing Dio material from Rainbow and Sabbath up until, you know, the last Dio band. So what do you think of that? Have you heard anything about the Dio Disciples, and what do you think of, you know, his surviving band members continuing on to keep his legacy alive?
I think it's cool. You know, I mean, Ronnie James Dio's music is going to live on no matter what. But I mean, to see, you know, former you know, band members, or, you know, former members of his band, there's been many of them. But to go out there and do a tribute to him and play his music, I think that's awesome. You know, it's something I would, I mean, if I had the opportunity to go, I mean, I would absolutely go and see it, you know, because I love Dio. You know, Ronnie, I mean, people always thought about him, you know, I've read stuff just, you know, about him, you know, where people thought, you know, that he was, you know, like, you know, the devil and all this stuff. I mean, none of that stuff was true. You know, he was just, it's just you know, just like Kiss, you know, it's just you know, the stuff he wrote about, he never wrote about anything like evil and stuff like that. You know, he's one of the, he's also not, I mean, not only, I mean, aside from being a great vocalist, he's also a tremendous songwriter, you know. I mean, my favorite Dio album has always been Holy Diver. I love Holy Diver. You know, I think it's one of the greatest heavy metal albums ever produced, ever put out on the market. It was Holy Diver, you know. I still have that album. I love listening to it. I never get tired of it, you know. But I mean, I think it's a really cool thing that, you know, his former bandmates are going out and performing his music. That to me is awesome. I think that's cool.
Okay, let's stop and take a moment to enjoy some of his talented songwriting and rocking styles. This song is called Better in the Dark, taken from his Volume 2 album as well.
Yeah!
Let's listen to more of the discussion between J-Rock Houston and Jay DeBerry about Ronnie James Dio.
And the cool thing to me about it is it's, you know, you have all these countless tribute bands around it, which are basically, you know, cover bands of other people playing, you know, playing other people's music that they're actually making a living off of. And to me, this is a true tribute band in the sense that, you know, they're the guys that actually play the music, but and you can tell if you go ever go see one of their shows that these are not guys doing it because they're in it, you know, to make a buck off of his death. They're actually doing out their love for their so-called fallen leader. You know, they want to keep his name alive, and it's actually almost like a spiritual thing if you go to one of these concerts. Because I mean, just hearing these guys perform a material, you could see it's coming from their heart and for their love of Ronnie. And it's not so much about, you know, making a fast buck. Of course, they're musicians, they gotta make a living, so you know they're getting a little something out of it, but that's not their sole, you know, purpose for doing it. And I think this is the truest sense of what I would say is a tribute band as opposed to a lot of these other cover bands.
Oh yeah, I absolutely agree. You know, because these are musicians that have actually played with the man, you know, knew the guy personally, you know. And I mean, I have nothing against tribute bands. You know, I think it's cool that, you know, when you know some musicians decide to get together and do a tribute to you know their favorite bands or artists and stuff like that. You know, I've seen a couple of Kiss tribute bands years ago back in the 90s. I seen one that was actually from Chicago. I seen them in Chicago called Kissed. And I mean they put on, I mean it was like, I mean to me it was like seeing Kiss, you know, in a club. I mean they have the explosions, they have the big Kiss sign behind them flashing on and off to Kiss. And you know they their makeup and everything was, I mean, to a T. Their costumes, if they you know, I mean if you look close to the faces, of course you could tell it wasn't, you know, the real members. But if you stand back from a distance, I couldn't tell the difference. I mean they had their songs down to a T. I mean perfect. I mean, and you know, I mean, it, but I mean if you know a group of musicians are gonna embark on a project, you know, where they're going to do a tribute to some band, you know, I think it'd be very important that they have that band's music down, you know. But, you know, in the case of Ronnie James Dio, I mean, they've got it down because they're the ones that played it live. So, I mean, like I said, it's something that if that was ever to come around, you know, the area where I live, I would definitely want to go and check that out. That would be a good time.
You know, that's why, too, like if you get a chance to hear the new Dio album, The Very Beast of Dio 2, like I said, it's a lot of his lesser-known material from the second half of his solo career. But the cool thing about that is twofold. I think it's going to give people like a second chance to give these songs a listen, you know. And it, even though their songs have already been released, a lot of people have not heard them before, not taking the time to listen. So it's in a way really like having a new Dio album. And that's what they're, you know, on tour right now promoting the album. And I just think if you get a chance to check it out, it's really a great experience. And the cool thing too is like you got all the guys that were in the Dio band, and then you got Tim Ripper Owens, who of course was in Infant Malmsteen and Judas Priest and Iced Earth, and he was actually friends with Ronnie and his wife Wendy. He's actually put his solo career and stuff on hold just to do this out of you know, his love for Ronnie. And it's amazing because these guys, like Dio, they got such a huge huge range in their voice. And they sound almost, if you close your eyes, you'd almost think it was him for a minute. And the audience was really into it when I went to see the show. And, you know, it was near Disneyland in Anaheim, California. But it's really a great show. And I'm hoping that they'll at least put out a live DVD or something, because it's just something. If you don't get a chance to capture life, it's something great to see and experience. And you know, on that note, there's also another a tribute project going around. It's actually Vivian Campbell's. He's calling it The Last in Line, and it's him and all the other guys that played on the first three Dio albums. There's a little bit of controversy around it because, you know, for years there was bad blood between Ronnie and Vivian, and he went, and for several years he distanced himself from the Dio music, but since Ronnie's death, you know, he's got the idea to have this little tribute project. What do you think about that? Do you think people should be so concerned why he's doing it?
No, not really. I mean, I didn't. Bernie, Ron James Dio and Vivian Cale will have problems between them. I never really knew that. But I mean, you know, I feel the same way about it as I do these other guys that are doing a tribute. You know, I mean, Vivian Campbell, you know, that's, like I said, when I seen Dio, that was Ronnie James Dio's guitar player. You know, and I mean, Vivian Campbell is a guitar god, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know. But I mean, I don't see nothing wrong with that. But I mean, like I said, Ronnie James Dio is a legend. You know, he's always going to be a legend. You know, and if anybody, you know, particularly, you know, other artists that have performed with him and recorded with him choose to go out and play his music, I mean, I don't see nothing wrong with that. You know, because people want to hear, you know, there's always going to be people out there that are going to want to hear his music. You know, and they will pay to go and see that, or, you know, I mean, if I were to go see something like that, I mean, it would be very spiritual in a sense, you know, because, I mean, I'm a big fan, you know, and I've always been, you know, and like I said, when I heard of his death, his passing, it was very sad, you know, but, you know, we all have to go sometime, you know, but I mean, I don't see nothing wrong with that at all, no, not at all.
Okay, taking our last and final break before we actually start wrapping up our discussion with Rock Talk, and currently we're talking about Ronnie James Dio. We're going to listen to a song. It's actually track 2 off of the very best of, or the very beast of, I should say, Volume 2, which is Dio's newest album that came out. And this song is called Push, and it's a really good song.
Yeah, you know, in fact, I got a chance to see him when he was performing with Heaven and Hell, which was, you know, basically Black Sabbath, but they were unable to use a name. But it was still just an awesome show. And what the amazing thing is, you look this was really essentially a little tiny guy up on stage, but he had such a powerful voice, such a powerful presence. It's just amazing to you that somebody that little could have such a powerful voice. And you know, again, I never met the man, but I'm a fan of his singing and all his work, even as far back as Rainbow, which, you know, that's the interesting thing. From the start of his career, you know, he's playing in other people's bands. Rainbow was Ritchie Blackmore. Sabbath was Tony Iommi and Geezer Butler. But yet he was always able to make whatever the band was his, you know, make it all his own and make it, you know, and let his talent shine. And he was also, I think, very smart. Even when he got into the Dio band, he always surrounded himself around very talented players. You know, he was not a one-man show. It was not all about spotlight being on him. And I think that's what made him just such a great, you know, powerful vocalist. And that, would you agree? You know, it's amazing when you think that the guy had a almost 40-year career, you know, at the time of his death. And talking a little bit about Tenacious D with Jack Black, one of the songs on the new Best Of album is called Push. And that's actually, if you get a chance to go maybe on YouTube or something, check out the video. It's for a Dio song. Again, Push, and Jack Black actually makes an appearance in that video with the Dio band. If you don't get a chance to check it out, I'd strongly suggest that. And, you know, I've heard nothing but stories about what a loyal guy Ronnie was. I mean, all the way back to when he was in the band Elf in the early 70s with his cousin David Rock Feinstein, who was a guitar player. He actually, when Ritchie Blackmore approached him about joining Rainbow, that was the condition he made, that, well, you know, I got a band of my own, and I wouldn't feel right, you know, leaving them, you know, leaving them, you know, without a singer or anything. And so he took those guys for a year, and they were actually Ritchie Blackmore's first incarnation of Rainbow, and then it kind of all fell apart. And then, you know, also when Dio left Black Sabbath in the early 80s to form his Dio band, he actually took drummer Vinny Appice with him. Now, being a drummer yourself, Jeff, I'd like to ask you, how big of a fan are you of Vinny's?
I like Vinny. I like him a lot. I mean, when I seen him play with Dio, I mean, he was doing stuff up there that was just blowing my mind. I mean, he had a drum set that he was just surrounded by it that went from the front all the way around the back. I mean, there was one point when he did this roll, this fill that where he started off in the front of his kit and spun all the way around. I mean, so fast and hit every single drum all the way around and came back and continued to play. I mean, it just blew my mind. You know, I mean, I know his brother, Carmine's as a drummer, I don't really know a lot about him, but I mean, Vinny Appice is actually one of my favorite drummers.
Yeah, you know, and the interesting thing, I was going to ask you about that. Have you ever had a chance, being on YouTube or online, to see any of the videos that Vinny has made with his brother? They have a project like this live concert thing. It's like a drum off between the two of them. They call it, I think, Drum Wars. Have you read anything about that?
No, I haven't seen anything like that. But if it's on YouTube, I'll definitely go check it out. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, because basically, you know, they're two powerhouse drummers, and it's almost like a drum off, a drum competition to see who can, you know, who can beat the drums the loudest. And it's really a unique thing, because most time when you think of drummers in the back, you know, in the back of the stage. And I've heard Carmine Appice say his whole approach to drumming is he wanted to take the drums, you know, from the back of the stage and put them up in the front. If you've ever seen either of these guys, they're just, like you said, just powerhouse drummers. And on that note, Jeff, that'll bring this edition of Rock Talk to close. Before we go, is there anything you want to let our listeners know about that you're currently working on?
At the moment, I've been just kind of taking a break. You know, I'm taking a little break from the music. I get to a point where I get kind of burnt out on it. You know, I am planning on. I mean, I do have 5 songs complete already for this next my next album. The latest, like we talked about last time, is already. I've posted that song. It's called This Broken Heart. I have a lot of ideas for some more music. This next album that I do I'm gonna try. Every album that I do, you know, I try to make it better than the last one. And in the case of most musicians and artists, recording artists, you know, their current project is always, you know, to them their best stuff. But this one, I'm gonna try and do a little variety of some stuff. I mean, I want to, you know, some commercial type. I'm kind of trying to really go back to my Lost in the City album, where I had I had some real hard heavy metal songs on there, as well as some commercial type songs. And I think I'm probably going to continue that with this album. I'd like to maybe do work maybe a couple songs without you know heavy metal guitars, with just like acoustic and drums and bass and stuff like that. So I'm kind of experimenting with some different things here and there. And whatever sounds best to me, that's what I'll put on the album. I'm not as I've said before, I'm not sure when it'll be finished. I'm hoping for maybe sometime early to mid spring. I'll have that album out, and we'll just see what happens from there.
Is it ever as a recording artist, a musician, is it ever difficult, like in your case, that you're truly a solo artist, meaning that you don't have a band to bounce ideas off? You ever feel like, you know, everything's pressure because everything's kind of, you know, on you?
No, not at all. I mean, I actually like it that way because I can do whatever I want, you know. I played drums in many different bands for quite a few years, I miss, you know, playing live at times, but I don't miss all the stuff that all the headaches and stuff that came along with it, you know, being an unknown and, you know, having all equipment around and and stuff like that. I don't miss that stuff at all. You know, I don't miss, not always having the band members get along with each other. When I do my own music, I can do whatever I want to do. You know, I don't have, a lot of times, I'll record a song. I mean, there's been actually a couple of songs that I recorded. I completely finished them, and I started to upload them, and then I listened back to them a few times. It's like, that just sounds like total crap. And I just completely deleted the files and everything because I just didn't want them to do with it. And I'll just start over from scratch. You know, that's it. I think that's what I like best about, being an independent artist. I can do whatever I want, whenever I want to do it. I can take my time. I'm not on any kind of a deadline where I have to have an album completed by a certain date, where I'm rushing trying to write songs. You know, because when I cannot force myself to write a song. I can't force myself to play. I have to be in the mood to do it. You know, trying to force myself to write a song, the song's going to come out sounding like garbage. You know, when I feel inspired to write a song about something or whatever it may be, the song always comes out sounding, I'm satisfied with it. You know, I like it. You know, and that's usually the reaction I get from anyone that listens to it. They like it, you know. And I'm always glad that I took my time, to do it the way that I do it. You know, it's like, like I've said before, music is just something that I've reached a point in my life where I just enjoy doing. You know, I like doing it on the side. It's not how I make a living. Would I like it to be how I made a living? Sure, I would like it to be if I could do it the way I wanted to, if I could do it the way I do it. You know, but, if most bands and artists that are under a contract, nine times out of ten, record companies set their standards and you have to do things the way they want them done. You know, it has to be done by this time, that time, and I'm just not into any of that kind of stuff right now. I'm getting too old for it. I think I'll just continue to do it the way I do it and I'll just sit and see what happens.
Okay, and you're a very creative guy, which is something we've talked about in the past, Jeff, as far as all the music videos. I suggest our listeners go on YouTube and check out all your music videos they haven't had a chance, but is that something you plan to continue to do with the new album?
Yes, actually, I've had some ideas to do some, make a video of some of the songs that are on Lightning Strikes yet. I just haven't really found the time to do it because making a video is very time consuming, especially when I'm the only person doing it. all the whole editing process, in order to make the song, make the video, look and sound right, I do lip sync, the words, although I have the music playing, loud in the background, when I edit it, I have video editing stuff on my computer. I just, when I put that video on there, the raw sound of the music playing in the background is what's there. So, but I mute that, and then I put the actual recording of the song over it, and then I have to kind of try to line up, with the way my mouth is moving as to where the lyrics come in and stuff like that. And that's, I think that's what takes the most time. And then I try to edit it and put stuff in between, and it's not just me standing there looking at the camera singing. I mean, that would just be boring.
Yeah.
I try to edit other stuff in there, my song, Homeward Bound. That was the last video I made. That video took me about 3 weeks to actually do, put it all together and to where it was. And I look at it, and you can tell it's homemade, but I like it. I myself can watch it quite often. It's entertaining, there's humor to it, and stuff like that. And that's how I kind of, the next time I do a video, it will be similar to that. And yes, I do plan to do more stuff like that.
I gotta say, most people know by now that most music videos are lip-synced, even live performance stuff, but I think just the fact that you take the time to try to line up your actual singing to the song, that just speaks volumes as far as your dedication. Even though you say, you can tell that it's a homemade music video, being somewhat a fan of your music, Jeff, I gotta say, they still look somewhat semi professional, maybe because, you know, people can actually tell you taking the time and effort to, you know, put your heart and soul into it. I think that's what's great. Now, the last thing I'd like to talk about, if you can hold on for a few more minutes before we actually go, is we were talking a little bit about Ritchie Blackmore today. We're talking about how, and then last episode, we're talking about how Deep Purple was recently, they were nominated to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but they didn't actually make it. Now, of course, when people hear the name Ritchie Blackmore, they automatically think of Deep Purple, Rainbow. He's got this other band now, since he's left Deep Purple, you know, in the early 90s, called Blackmore's Night. And I got to tell you, like many people, myself, I was kind of hesitant to even listen to music because it has more in common with like neoclassical music than, say, hard rock or metal. But the publicist sent me a copy of this CD and DVD that they recently put out. And I was open-minded. I thought, okay, you know what? I'm a fan of Ritchie Blackmore. I'm going to give it a fair listen and see what I think. And I got to say, again, though, you know, if you're expecting it to sound like Deep Purple, Rainbow, well, in the sense that it's got Ritchie's playing, but it's really far removed from that. But at the same time, I was impressed, maybe because I watched the DVD portion first, which is a live concert, and I could see, you know, again, it's very even though it's neoclassical, it's very theatrical. That impressed me about it, and I listened to the CD, and while I'm not going to run out and buy nothing but classical music CDs now, I thought, okay, I could get into this. Have you heard any of his stuff with Blackmore's Night, or that's something you would be interested in giving a listen to?
I'd love to hear it. Yeah. You know, I was going to say, in a lot of cases, you know, guitarists, you know, like Ritchie Blackmore and even a lot of other heavy metal guitar players and musicians, you know, sometimes people may tend to think that's all they can play, but many of them are very, very accomplished musicians. Like for instance, my wife, she likes a lot of like death metal and stuff like that, but she finds like all these bands. And she goes, sometimes I don't even know where they find them. Like a one band in particular called Insomnium. I don't care for those type of vocals, but I mean, listening to the music, these guys are doing some really complicated. As far as I'm concerned, extravagant stuff, and they also are very accomplished musicians in the field of classical music and everything else, you know, and it just blows my mind when I hear, you know, when I sit and really listen to it, you know, it's some of the coolest stuff I've ever heard, you know, and Ritchie Blackmore's case, I mean, it does not surprise me not one bit that he has classical background. And yeah, I would love to hear that. I mean, because I'm into all different kinds of music. I mean, heavy metal and hard rock has always been my favorite. But I mean, I like all kinds of stuff. I even like country music. I'm a huge Garth Brooks fan. You know, I mean, I like jazz. I'm from Chicago. You know, it's just like the book of the blues. You know, there's more blues music out there, and if you ever want to go hear good blues music, go to Chicago. You know, I mean, I'm into all different types of stuff. So I mean, my mind is always open to listening to anything. Any type of music for that matter. You know, the only kind of music that I really don't like, I mean, very much, is like, you know, modern pop music, Justin Bieber, and you know, stuff like that. I mean, I can't listen to that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, it's just silly, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But I mean, it makes a lot of money, you know. So kudos to them. But I mean, I do enjoy stuff like that. And yeah, I would absolutely, most definitely like to hear something. Would love to hear that.
Okay, yeah, you know, I totally hear you. And the thing is, the reason I bring it up is, again, you know, I think if people would be more open minded to hearing things, they might be surprised. You know, that's not half bad, or, you know, I actually like it. Like I said, I'm not all of a sudden a fan of classical music, but I have appreciation for, I think that there's something to be said, you know, the legends, you've heard the legends and the stories as far as Ritchie Blackmore and Ian Gillan and the other guys in Deep Purple hating each other. And I think the fact that you got a guy here who, rather being in a band where he could make a lot of money with playing with, you know, guys that he hates and can't get along with, doing what he really loves. I mean, and the interesting thing, one last thing to note about Blackmore's Night is it's a project he's doing with his wife, and her name is Candace Knight. She's got a she recently released a solo album of her own, but she's kind of got this Stevie Nicks appeal to her, and very talented in her own right. And so I urge anybody to go check it out. And I got a review of their latest CD DVD up at chaoticriffs.com. You can go check that out, as well as the latest edition of Chaotic Riffs magazine. So Jeff, I guess that'll end this episode of Rock Talk, and thanks again for taking time out of your busy schedule to do this. We really appreciate it. And unless there's anything else you'd like to say, I think we'll wrap it up for this episode.
Nope, just that I've really enjoyed doing this, Jason. It's a lot of fun. Love talking to you. You're a great guy.
You've been listening to Riff Talk on RiffManiaRadio.com. If you're interested in being featured on one of our shows, please visit the appropriate section of our website. Until next time, keep on rocking and banging that head.